Welcome to Milwaukee's Philanthropic Community Radio Show. I'm Julie Ellenbecker, president of Ellenbecker Investment Group. EIG is committed to bringing awareness to organizations in our community. This show highlights local and surrounding area nonprofits to help listeners learn how they can have an impact in our community and is for educational purposes only. We believe that helping the community is always positive and recognize the importance of providing a voice. Every organization highlighted is a qualified 501c3. The opinions and missions expressed on MPC do not necessarily reflect the opinions of Ellenbecker Investment Group employees and leaders. Please enjoy today's show.
Welcome. This is EIG, Milwaukee's philanthropic community, with your host, Jill Economo, on News Talk 1130 WISN.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you for joining us today for Milwaukee's philanthropic community, where our goal is to inform, inspire, and impact our listening audience by sharing what great things people and organizations are doing to make a difference in the lives of others. I'm your host, Jill Economo, Director of Community Outreach at EIG. So my first guest today is from an organization that is one of the longest standing nonprofits in the state and one of the oldest incorporated organizations in Wisconsin. It's also older than the record player. It's older than the light bulb, the Kodak camera, and the zipper. Now that's quite a claim to fame, I'd say. Who is it, you ask? Well, I think you might be surprised by the answer. Welcome to the show today, John Yops, President CEO of Jewish Family Services, whose programs and services promote dignity, independence, and stability for vulnerable populations, including low-income individuals and families, at-risk older adults, and people with disabilities. So welcome to the show today, John.
Morning, Jill. Great to be here.
Glad to have you. It's quite a claim to fame that you guys have at JFS, and I'll ask you to elaborate on more about that in a minute. But I understand that you have a background in working with kids and adults with disabilities. So can you share with us briefly why you chose to pursue this particular area of interest?
Oh, absolutely. Great question, Jill. I started working with kids with disabilities while I was an undergraduate at UWM. I enjoyed very much working with the kids and in this field in general. And I found that I had an interest and success in systems. And I found that by working with a system approach, I could help more people than I would if I were working with one client at a time. I was fortunate in my career to have opportunities for advancement, and I find myself at JFS. I'm grateful that I helm an organization that measures success in terms of mission and impact. We're there to support those cannot manage the things that come up during their day.
And I love the idea of mission and impact. I think that's so important. That's obviously one of the reasons why we do the show. Tell us more about JFS and what sets them apart from similar agencies.
Well, as you said, we've been serving the community since 1867. Over time, the needs and priorities of a community evolve, including ours. If JFS is anything, we are resilient, committed, and determined. In our 157 years, we've evolved many times over to respond to the needs that change in our community over all that time. Our programs and services focus on restoring and maintaining the independence, ability, and dignity of each one of our clients, providing the assistance they need to live the life they choose.
Okay, so elaborate a little bit for us on the services that you offer, the outpatient mental health therapy and the medication management services, school-based mental health services, those things.
Sure. So I tend to describe our services as kind of three buckets or three pillars or three legs of a stool. We provide case management services to people with disabilities who are aging or elderly, to Eastern European immigrants from the former Soviet Union and Holocaust survivors, and we serve survivors of domestic violence, sexual assault, and trafficking. We provide outpatient mental health therapy and medication management at our clinic locations in Milwaukee and Brown Deer. We provide school-based mental health services in seven local schools. And we own and operate four, soon to be five, affordable housing developments for families and seniors in Brown Deer, Wisconsin.
Well, you have quite a vast array of services, I'd say. You do have an area that you focus on, or a core area of service, which is mental health. Can you tell us about the services in that area?
Absolutely. We have two clinic locations, one on Jackson Street in downtown Milwaukee, and another in Brown Deer at one of our buildings. Its name is Bradley Crossing. We also provide mental health services, as I mentioned earlier, in seven local schools. We provide mental health services for adults, seniors, families, and children at both locations. Our clinicians utilize various approaches to be effective in their discipline. Our clinic serves individuals dealing with many issues such as ADHD, grief and stress, anxiety and depression, and addiction. We have specialists who are equipped to deal with more specialized trauma-related needs of survivors and witnesses of crime, assault, and violence.
And so, did you say that you have specific places in Milwaukee where you provide these services, these specific mental health services?
Yes, we provide them at our clinic on Jackson Street, 1300 North Jackson Street, and also at our housing development, Bradley Crossing in Brown Deer, Wisconsin.
Okay, so two specifically that are focusing in that area of mental health. So would you say, John, that you have a vision for growth, or are you looking to keep your focus on the services that you currently offer?
Well, Jill, we're always looking to grow. Any business, and we are a business, despite the fact that we're not-for-profit, needs to have growth for it to be sustainable. That'll be something I'll touch on a little bit later. We're dedicated to continuing the legacy of JFS, doing the things that have been necessary to get us where we are now, to continue to meet the needs of our community. And those needs evolve. We see ourselves as being flexible and evolving along with those needs. We'll continue to innovate as we respond to expanding mental health needs in our community. As we all know, there's an increasing need for mental health services, particularly among youth, particularly in schools. So we'll continue to be in that space. And as the population ages, we'll continue to provide services for aging and elderly that we currently offer as that population expands.
Okay, so then are your services free? You know, how do people pay?
Another great question, Jill. Our services, we have multiple pathways to pay for services. We accept Medicaid, we accept commercial insurance, we accept private pay. And we have a sliding fee scale, which is a fee based on one's income and ability to pay. So that is addressed on an individual basis. I think this is what makes JFS special. You know, we'll take the commercial insurance. We'll serve someone with Medicaid as their insurance. We'll also rely on philanthropy and the generosity of others to help make sure that we meet the needs of the people that come to our clinics.
Well, and I think it's important for people listening to know that you're really willing to work with people where they're at. You'll find a way, you know, so it sounds like you've got multiple ways that you can service people, and that they shouldn't let the service, how they think they're going to pay for something, get in the way.
We don't, right, exactly. Right. We don't want that to be a barrier to service.
Right. Very good. Well, there's strong evidence that suggests that housing is a social determinant of health that affects both physical and mental health. We're going to take a quick commercial break, but when we return, we're going to learn what JFS is doing to help this situation. So stay tuned, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to EIG, Milwaukee's Philanthropic Community, with your host, Jill Economo, on News Talk 1130 WISN.
Welcome back. I'm your host, Jill Economo, and I'm continuing my conversation today with John Yaps from the Jewish Family Services. So I said before the break that there's strong evidence that suggests that housing is a social determinant of health that affects both physical and mental health. Not only, of course, for adults, but think of the impact on children. I believe, John, you told me that one of your first attempts to combat this issue was with housing for children. Tell us what JFS is doing in this regard.
Sure, Jill. So safe and affordable housing is a critical building block to forming a stable community. Safe and affordable housing is an anchor for individuals and families and has been demonstrated to lead to improved academic outcomes and achievement, improved employment attainment, reduced law enforcement encounters, improved healthcare outcomes, and improved overall mental health. Our Bradley Crossing development in Brown Deer, Wisconsin houses 100 children along with their families for a total of about 350 people in our housing development. And we spend time working with those kids and the Brown Deer School District to make sure they have the support and stimulation they need to be successful in school, going to those social determinants of health.
Nice. Well, I understand that you have a new project called Wooddale Crossing. So you mentioned one of the housing projects before. Actually, is that the only one that you have, or do you have another one?
Oh, thank you for asking, Jill. No, we have several. JFS develops, owns, and operates four housing developments currently. They're all safe and affordable housing. It could be for individuals and seniors. It could be for kids and families. But they are named Deerwood 1 and Deerwood 2, which are for 55 and up, and Bradley Crossing 1 and Bradley Crossing 2, which are a family housing development, so for kids and families. And we have a fifth development, Wooddale Crossing, coming online soon.
Okay, and is that gonna be open to families and to families as a whole, or just elderly, or?
Wooddale Crossing's going to serve seniors 55 and up,
okay.
People with disabilities. One quarter of the units are reserved for persons with a disability. So it will be very innovative a project, as most of ours are.
Okay, all right. What about collaboration? You know, we talk about the importance of collaboration and how, some organizations can't do what they do or want to do to the extent they want to do it without collaboration. Is there anybody in particular, a group of people that you collaborate with to around your mission?
I'm glad you asked that, Jill. Yes, we have many collaborating partners on the funding side and on the service side. One of our most key relationships is with Sojourner Family Peace Center. Sojourner Family Peace Center serves survivors of domestic violence, trafficking, sexual assault. We are the service provider partner on site at the location in Milwaukee. And we serve the adults who go there for services. Another provider meets the needs of kids who come. But we provide staff on site that meet with survivors. They initialize therapy. And then after a couple of sessions, if a survivor chooses to, they can continue their services with us at our Jackson Street Clinic.
Okay, great. Well, I have a question that actually other people might be thinking too. So let me ask you, since your name is Jewish Family Services, do you only serve the Jewish population?
I'm glad you asked that question. I am asked that question from time to time. So Jewish Family Services serves the entire community. We started in 1867. It was started by the Jewish community in Milwaukee to help people emigrate from Europe. And so the name was, at the time, Hebrew Relief Services. And it evolved over time to what it is today, Jewish Family Services. So if you took out the word Jewish, we provide family services for everybody in the community. Our philosophy, our values, our motivations are rooted in the Jewish traditions, but we serve every person in the community.
Okay, very nice. Well, it sounds like JFS does a lot of things to make an impact in our community. What would you say is your greatest need right now? You know, how can people listening show their support to JFS?
So earlier we were talking about people getting services even if they can't pay for it. So in that space, we rely on people's generosity. We rely on what we call philanthropy to help make sure that we can pay our staff and that we are available to meet needs in the community, that we are sustainable. All of our services rely on some form of philanthropic support. And so we positively affect the community's strengths when we make it a better place for all of us. And this only happens by getting the word out, which you're helping us to do right
mm-hmm.
now. JFS does many things for many people, and everything we do has a long history of excellence. our professionals are knowledgeable, passionate, and committed to what they do. And our greatest challenge is our ability to continue meeting the increasing needs of our community, maintaining our high standards, and providing quality services.
And I think it's just real life, right, to talk about the challenges that you might have, because we're sharing what your greatest need is, and maybe there's a startup nonprofit out there that is saying, this is all great, you know, all this information that John is sharing is all great, but let's get real, you know, have you had challenges along the way? And I think it's important to share those. So you're saying your biggest challenge is sustainability, right?
Exactly. It is sustainability.
Okay. Do you have a particular call to action that you would like to share with us today?
I do. I'd like all your listeners to know that I'm fortunate to have a dedicated, smart, and compassionate leadership team. We work hard to engage, support, and appreciate them so they can provide the help our community truly needs. JFS is JFS on Jackson Street or in Brown Deer or anywhere, because it is the people that provide the services, not the name on the door that people come to get. Our call of action is one of unity. We look for the helpers to generate goodwill and provide as much support as they can. What we need listeners to do is help us help others. Go to jfsmilw.org to donate, or call us at 414-225-1345 and talk to us about what you can do.
So, John, we got some really great information about JFS and all the great things that you do. I talk all the time about the three goals for the show, providing information, inspiration, and impact. So I'm just curious, in our closing minutes here, do you have some additional thoughts that you'd like to share with our audience?
I do, Jill, very much. Thank you for asking. We talked about our greatest challenge being sustaining that high quality level of service that JFS is known for. And we have talked about needs every nonprofit has in our space, you know, maintaining our programs and ensuring the community needs are met. We rely on philanthropic support and grants to do this work. And I want to emphasize how grateful we are to be able to reach the people who need help and have an impact in their lives. And we are always looking for new supporters who share our commitment to meeting the needs of the community. We're especially grateful that we can help people in so many different places. Every day, we reach people all across our community. We are in schools. We are in our clinics. We are at the Domestic Violence Center. And we are in people's homes, making sure they are okay. They are okay.
And I'm sure that, you know, that's an important piece, you know, that you're in people's homes. And, you know, it's not always the case where they come to see you, right? I mean, you can go to them. And I think it's important for people to understand that piece.
That's a good distinction. We do provide services in people's homes. They tend to be older folks who may be more isolated. They may be living on their own and not have access to transportation. So we have therapists who provide services inside homes to those folks.
Yeah. I mean, I've got a mother who would be so grateful that people would come to her instead of her trying to figure out how to go to them. So that's great.
You know, the other part is a socialization experience. Often older folks who are alone are lonely. They don't spend time with other people. So this is also a social exercise for them. So it's a great feeling to know we can have, you know, good impact for them individually.
Yeah.
And I want to comment that the domestic violence work we do is powerful. Since 2016, we have been providing specialized survivor services at Sojourner Family Peace Center. And they've been a partner of ours for years, and we've been in their space for the last 8 or so years, serving the adults who come for services. Interestingly, I often run into people who have a story about JFS. They're eager to tell me about an experience they or a family member had and how happy they are that we were there for them. When I started my job, I was told by the previous executive director, don't be surprised if you're having dinner at a restaurant and you're interrupted, or you're in Sendex and someone comes up to you, or you're at X other store and you run into someone who knows someone at JFS. And that's all true, and it does happen to me. And I am humbled to represent an organization that's meant so much to so many people in our community. Mm-hmm. When I encounter people who tell me about how JFS helped them, it's usually a parent or a grandparent, and they remember how important, how life-changing their experience was. With tears in their eyes, they have said, even in the grocery store, I wouldn't be where I am today without you. Mm-hmm. My grandfather was in your orphanage. Last year, you really helped my daughter. She was really struggling. Mm-hmm. Or, hey, I was adopted from JFS. Can you help me find my birth family? These are powerful experiences.
I bet.
And people remember us, and it's been this way for 157 years. That orphanage was open to meet the needs of the community for 50 years, from the early 20s to the middle 1970s. Our mental health clinic is 40 years old, and thanks to the support of the community, we can continue to help in ways that people need and care about. This is my joy and also the challenge of heading an agency like JFS.
And again, there's never enough time to go into everything that an organization does. We're just trying to plant that mustard seed so people get just a glimpse. So I appreciate you sharing the different programs you have, all the ways that you are making an impact in the community. And it's wonderful, you know, that you talked about the gratitude that you have for the people that serve and for the people that you do serve, and the joy that you have and the fulfillment, really, in what you do. So that's awesome. Thank you for sharing that.
Of course.
Okay. Well, thank you, John Yaps, for participating and sharing all the great things that JFS or Jewish Family Services does to make an impact in the community. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me, Jill. This has been great.
You're welcome. John mentioned that their biggest challenge right now is ensuring that their programs and their services are sustainable and reach as many people as possible, right? It seems like an overwhelming task, but that's where the community comes in. There are organizations and individuals out there that can and really want to help. In the next half of our show, we're going to learn about an organization that has supported JFS so that they can continue the great impact that they're making. So stay tuned to learn more after our commercial break. We'll be right back.
Thanks for tuning in. This is EIG, Milwaukee's philanthropic community, with your host, Jill Economo, on News Talk 1130 WISN.
Welcome back to Milwaukee's Philanthropic Community, brought to you by Ellen Becker Investment Group. I'm your host, Jill Economo, Director of Community Relations. And my next guest today is from an organization that helped the Jewish Family Services continue the great work that they do, in addition to helping other great organizations continue the great work that they do. Welcome to the show today, Chris Rick, Executive Director of the Charles E. Kubley Foundation. Welcome.
Thank you so much, Jill.
You're welcome. Welcome, and you're welcome. Tell us how you first got started with the organization.
Yes, I have been with the foundation since 2014, 10 years, and started there mainly in a behind-the-scenes position of business management and event planning. In January of 2021, I was asked to step up to my current position of executive director. And right now, I'm actually the only employee of the foundation, just because we've made some technological changes that allow me to cover all the bases. I am it. Some days are a little crazy. Others are. We've got it all under control. But bottom line is, I wear many hats.
Okay, you are it, and a bag of chips too, as they say. Right.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
How did the Charles E. Kubley Foundation get its start?
Sure. Sadly, 21 years ago in 2003, Mike and Billy Kubley lost their son Charlie to the disease of depression. Charlie took his life after living, after all these years, I still get a little verklempt. But Charlie took his life after living with depression for most of his adult life. He was only 27 when he died, And Mike Kubley, Charlie's father, was determined not to hide behind suicide and the fact that that is how Charlie died. They wanted everyone close to them to know that depression killed their son. Subsequently, the accumulation of generous memorial gifts the family received was so significant that they, along with several close friends of theirs and Charlie's, decided to create the Charles E. Kubley Foundation. I also like to mention that both Billy and Mike Kubley have given large gifts to some area entities for research and treatment in mental health. And those larger gifts should not be confused with the grant giving of the Charles E. Kubley Foundation. A general rule of thumb is if it's under $50,000, it's the foundation. And if it's over $50,000, it's Billy and Mike that have generously funded. We are a 501c3 public charity, and our average grant size that we give is about $9,000.
Very nice. Well, tell us who you serve then.
Sure. The Charles E. Kubley Foundation primarily serves Southeast Wisconsin and then beyond to the rest of our state. We are a project-based funder of mental health initiatives that align with our mission of helping those affected by the disease of depression with access to resources, initiatives that aim to prevent suicide, and initiatives that help reduce stigma associated with both depression and suicide.
Okay, well, you mentioned that the foundation funds quote-unquote project-based grants. Give us an example of the types of projects that you've funded.
Sure. I like to state that to date, the foundation has funded 451 projects that total over $4 million.
And wow.
So that's a great milestone for
us.
Yes,
yeah.
Our past projects funded are listed with a brief description on our website, which is cekf.org. The types of projects vary, but again, all align with our mission of improving the lives of those affected by depression. Some types of projects include public events with content that helps raise awareness of the disease or suicide prevention. We have funded peer support groups, as it is proven that people generally are more comfortable talking about their illness with others who have experienced it. We have funded trauma-informed care projects, social-emotional learning projects, QPR training, which is a way of questioning and referring someone suspected of having suicidal thoughts. We've done crisis intervention training for hopefully better outcomes of a mental health family emergency, and the list really goes on. Our funding has served a diverse group of people from youth to seniors, BIPOC populations, frontline workers such as firefighters and police officers, hospital staff, veterans, and more.
Wow. Well, we had a nonprofit seminar recently here in our education center where we talked about ways to find the companies and the foundations that support a nonprofit's mission and or their cause. So are there types of projects or areas of support that the Kubley Foundation is most interested in?
Again, they must meet our mission. But right now, in my opinion, programming that builds resilience in youth and provides social-emotional learning will go far in all of our communities. So initiatives that focus on social-emotional learning, programming, trauma-informed care at the most vulnerable of school populations, and resilience building and or mindfulness programming would be of great interest to us. If we give youth the tools for coping with and understanding their feelings, they have a better chance of taking care of themselves and being available for their education, families, and communities. That being said, we review all applications and really rely on our grant review committee that includes board members and esteemed behavioral health professionals from the Medical College of Wisconsin. So there are always many populations and varied organizations included in each grant cycle.
Okay. Now, there are many mental health organizations that say things got so much worse post pandemic. Where do you feel mental health wellness in communities and schools stands in general post-pandemic?
Sure. I think that the pandemic brought forth the incredible need for students and families to have mental health support from their schools and community. Many school districts haven't experienced this level of need in the past, and they haven't had the in-school support to be there for their students in this way. Generally, many schools did not have on-staff school psychologists or counselors available, and if they did, it would only be one person or a small staff to handle too many needs and requests for help. Even if the schools have funding for more behavioral health and staff services, it can be difficult to find candidates. There is a shortage of behavioral health professionals in general. We have received many more requests for social-emotional learning programming and suicide prevention programming from schools. Some additional programming for our youth would include mindfulness training and identifying children's own anxieties or depression.
And there seems to be a number of healthcare professionals who recommend holistic treatment coexisting with medical treatment. Do you think that that pertains to depression as well?
I do. You can't understate the need for serious treatment when someone has a serious illness like depression. But of course, we have directed funding to many types of holistic or mindfulness programming. Breathwork courses for regulation, mindfulness activities for youth to help them regulate their emotions as they come to school and get ready for a day of learning. We've also funded physical spaces that K through 12 and college campuses are using for students to go and address their emotional state. Some of these have software programming designed to de-escalate anxiety, weighted blankets, massage chairs, art therapy, and more to support someone getting back to calm. Don't forget, mental health is health, so physical exercise, sleep, and good nutrition are all critical.
Yep, that's important to mention as well, for sure. I think most would agree that raising awareness is one very important way that we can address the issues, we being individuals as well as community, associated with mental health. Stay tuned, because after the break, Chris is going to elaborate on how their foundation is doing that for the different populations they serve. We'll be right back.
You're listening to EIG, Milwaukee's Philanthropic Community, with your host, Jill Economo, on News Talk 1130 WISN.
Welcome back to Milwaukee's Philanthropic Community, brought to you by Ellen Becker Investment Group. I'm your host, Jill Economo, Director of Community Relations, and I'm talking in our last segment today with Chris Rick from the Charles E. Kubley Foundation. So, Chris, we talked about the importance of raising awareness of particular issues that people face relative to mental health. Share with us some of the different ways that your foundation is increasing awareness in the community.
Sure. First of all, we really want to raise awareness because that speaks to us eliminating stigma surrounding depression and suicide and mental health in general. As I mentioned previously, it's part of our mission to raise awareness as we receive grant requests that support awareness activities for varieties of populations. We really pay attention to these. There are specific populations that have an increased amount of stigma regarding mental health and depression. And those include BIPOC communities, especially Indigenous and Latino populations. Veterans come from their military backgrounds with the mindset kind of suck it up and handle it like a soldier when they have an increased need of addressing PTSD, perhaps, and moral injury. Another way that our foundation has made gains in public awareness is through our new group called the Young Leaders Council. And we organized this council in 2020 after a series of young adult events that were formed and started by Lily Kubley, who is an actual Kubley family member, Charlie's niece. And these events were put on by young adults that care about mental health. So after a few of these awareness events, we realized we should organize a group to continue this outreach with fundraising and more social activities and sort of meet them where they are. Additionally, this age group is so active through social media platforms that it helps get the messaging across to seek help, talk about depression and suicide, and support each other. And if most people don't know this, but mental illness and depression really can onset in later teen years or early adulthood. And often kids are running off to college and starting to experience something that can be very detrimental and serious to their health.
Mm. I think it's great, too, that you've got young kids involved in the action. Mm-hmm. You know, they're not just bystanders.
Right.
You know, that we say all the time, everybody can do something.
Right.
And so she, of course, has a vested interest that in the family. And so saying, you know, I can do something. Mm-hmm. And everybody out there can do something. They
exactly.
just have to figure out what that something is.
Right.
Right. It's not cheap to do all this awareness building, let alone fund the grant giving. What's your main source of funds that allows you to continue your grant giving?
Sure. We host an annual event that's called Beyond the Blues. We solicit sponsorships, both corporate and private, for the event. And the sponsorship appeal starts in April of every year. These sponsorships range from $500 to $20,000. And then towards the event, which is held in September, we sell tickets and encourage general donation support of the event if people can't attend it. The event is held on a Friday night every September, and we've returned to Discovery World for many years for our event space, as it's magical on the waterfront that time of year, right on Lake Michigan, and it fits our larger crowd of approximately 350 people. Beyond the Blues brings in almost $200,000, or right around that dollar amount each year, which is about two-thirds of our annual project funding budget. Charlie Kubley also loved the blues, and that was the inspiration for the first Beyond the Blues event.
Mm. Well, and you work from year to year on fundraising, so does your foundation have a solid footing for the future?
Yes, we were very grateful. In 2018, we were honored to receive a $500,000 gift from Michael and Jeannie Schmitz. They are dear friends of the Kubleys and also had a son who took his life at a young age named Joey Schmitz. Mike and Jeannie wanted to ensure that the foundation would endure and asked that the Charles E. Kubley Foundation seek to match their gift with an endowment campaign. So we did, in fact, get that accomplished, and now we have $1 million-plus endowment, and we couldn't be more grateful to the Schmitz family.
Mm, very nice. Mm-hmm. People standing up, and you know, they were affected too, right? So they
exactly.
wanted to be part of a solution.
I think they saw how powerful the foundation was becoming in its ability to make a difference. So
yeah. What do you see as the most dire need in our community now and going forward?
I think unless you have personally experienced depression, living with someone who has depression, or known a loved one who has taken their own life due to the illness, it doesn't resonate with you. Many people still feel depression is something that can be shaken off or buried. In fact, one in four adults will have experienced depression in their lifetime. And suicide rates continue to rise, even though awareness and prevention efforts have increased. Mental health funding only increased more recently from the state of Wisconsin for schools and et cetera, but our foundation fills many gaps and helps just make a difference where not necessarily funding is able otherwise.
Okay. Well, I think it's fitting to ask or to put out there, you know, if someone you know or you yourself are depressed or suicidal and listening right now, what would you, Chris, encourage them to do?
Number one, seek help. Don't remain silent. First up, if you are truly in a crisis, call 988 or 911 immediately. There are also local numbers to call for general mental health support, including the COPE hotline. I won't rattle off the actual numbers, but we can make sure those are provided to listeners on our website. The Milwaukee County Crisis Line, or they can text the HOPE Line. And I will mention the HOPE Line because that's very quick, 741-741. Also, Jewish Family Services can be reached 24 hours a day at 414-390-5800 or via their website at jfsmilw.org. Find a trusted friend, find a trusted neighbor. Just most importantly, get the help you need.
Mm, very important. Well, what would you say is the best way for folks listening to make a difference through your organization?
Obviously, we are a funder of projects and grant giving. And the best way they can make a difference is going to our website to learn more and donate. You can reach out through our site to receive email communications. Or you can send a check to our physical address, which is also included on our website. You can also call me. I take credit cards over the phone. My phone number is 414-477-9959. And we always tell people new to the foundation that although the topics we address are so heavy, we do really have a fun event, Beyond the Blues. And our Young Leader Council events are generally really fun as well. They host trivia nights, exercise classes, bingo, and there's all kinds of fun community engagement that they provide. So,
okay, so just to reiterate, if people want to reach out to get information on the Charles E. Kubley Foundation, can they just Google it? Will it take them
they
right there?
They can Google it. Our web address is our acronym, CEKF.org, which is Charles E. Kubley Foundation initials. But you can also spell that out, CharlesEKubleyFoundation.org.
Okay. Wow. Well, lots of good information today. I want to thank my guests, Chris Rick from the Charles E. Kubley Foundation and John Yaps from the Jewish Family Services. I appreciate both of you sharing how you're making an impact in the community in your own unique ways. So thank you for being here today.
We thank you. Thanks, Jill.
Thanks, Grill. Thanks, Jill.
You're welcome. If you'd like further information about what we talked about today, you can reach out directly to John or Chris for more information, or you can go to the platforms mentioned. If you know of a great organization doing great work in our community that you think would be a great guest for the show, or maybe there's a particular topic that you'd like to learn more about, you can email me at jill@ellenbecker.com. Tune in next Sunday morning at 10 to Milwaukee's philanthropic community to hear information and impactful stories from people who are helping to make our community a compassionate, supportive, and thriving place. You can tune in to News Talk 1130 on your radio, your computer, or your cell phone, and I encourage you to visit our website at ellenbecker.com to listen to previously aired shows, or you can now listen on demand at Spotify, Stitcher, Google Play, or Apple Podcast. My call to action today is to give some thought to how you can make a difference in some way for someone in our community, whether that's by donating, volunteering, or simply advocating for an organization that supports a common mission or a cause that's important to you. Or maybe you've heard about one on the show that just speaks to your heart. I'm sure anything you decide to do would be really appreciated. The great thing about giving and serving is it's addictive, in a good way. And it's contagious. So once you start, you'll want to do more. So let's take some time out of our busy schedules to find a way to be a blessing and give a blessing. Thanks for listening today, and have a great day.